This is the Ed Findell interview for December 20th, 2005.
Hello?
Yes, hello. This is Anthony. I'm calling from Miami for Ed Findell, please.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
Anthony from Miami. Who are you?
Hi, Ed. Sam Russell gave me your phone number through an email, and he probably told you about a book project I'm working on.
Sure, and he sure did, yeah.
Would this be a good time to talk with you?
I may be dead in a couple of days.
Well, I guess I better seize the moment then, I guess.
There you go.
Okay. I did read the interview that you held with the folks at Johnson Space Center back in 2000.
What's that, the oral history?
Yeah, that's right. It seems to me that's something they probably should have started about 20 years ago, but at any rate, I'll try not to go over ground that you mentioned there, and I'll be a little more specific in my questions, but basically my book is about, primarily about the lunar rover with subsequent chapters on the Martian rovers and then the new mission for space exploration.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But the first chapter deals with engineering the LRV, which includes the subsystems, the communication system, and Sam spoke to me at length about the development of the LCRU and the TV camera and so forth, but it seems like the images that were beamed back from the J missions are your primary claim to fame, even though your work at NASA goes, I mean, it was quite extensive. But I did want to ask some specific questions related to the system. Okay. I was trying to get more information on the development of the high-gain antenna that was used in relation to this. I mean, without that, there were no images. What can you tell me about that very distinctive high-gain antenna on the rover?
Okay. It was basically, you know what the antenna looked like. You've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
The pointing device was interesting because when you went to point it in that sight that was attached to it, you actually filled the sight with the earth.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was wondering about that because...
You aimed at the earth, and the way you did that was by filling the sight up with the earth.
Okay.
That gave you the best signal you were going to get.
Okay. I was unaware of that. I was wondered whether just eyeballed it or there was some sort of scale on the antenna that...
Naturally had to be stopped, and that's the way you eyeballed it, by looking at that lens. I mean, it's a sight, if you want to call it that, a sight.
Okay.
And you aimed it by doing that. Basically, it was nothing but a dish-type antenna, which gave you enough signal with the power amplifier and everything in the box to connect up with with the 85-foot dishes on Earth.
Right, it was line of sight too, and
and they were the signal margins were set for the 85-foot dishes, although we did use the 210s, which were available for the TV because of a better circuit margin, better picture quality.
Okay. Okay.
And that's about all I can tell you about it. I've got, some pictures and so on of it and so on.
Do you know if the antennas were engineered at Marshall or were they done by...
The antennas had nothing to do with Marshall at all.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, let me give you a couple of things, and I may be running over what Sam ran over.
Okay.
The LCRU was one RCA contract with RCA out of Camden, New Jersey.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
The camera was RCA out of Hightstown. They were two different contracts.
I see.
They had nothing to do with each other. They were led separately with a separate source board.
Okay.
And I believe the antenna came with the LCRU, both the low gain and the high gain antenna.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember right, back that far back, my Alzheimer's is kicking in. The camera was completely separate from those two, and they were handled out of JSC, out of the Johnson Space Center, on contracts. I'm trying to remember who the actual managers were. The LCRU, I believe, was what was his name, McPherson or something like that. I can't remember the guy's name.
Okay.
And the other one was, I believe, Olin Graham, and Bill Perry was the one who really did all that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The, let me see here, the pre-mission training for these things, you didn't just wait for these.
No, that was kind of neat. That whole thing worked kind of neat. Naturally, the LCRU training was done by the crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the operation, the LCRU, and with the engineering guys and with us, and the checklists were set up to get into the different modes and so on. The camera training, are you interested in that?
Yes, I am. That's okay. What I'm asking about.
Camera training was kind of neat. Pardon me. The guys over in the engineering directorate over in telecommunication division, specifically Olin Graham and his guys, built what we called a lunar table.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was basically was like a big sandbox.
Okay.
Which had contours in it, little people, and little astronauts in there, and so on. And using some high-intensity lights, we learned to operate the camera using that table and using the lights because of the brightness of the sun. We had those lights to use. That was the first step in the training and operating the camera.
Okay.
And then later on, we did training work with the crew and with some other people on a 1G rover, and we were able to, you know, do things like that. But that was basically what the training was, that lunar table and some live work, which the live work didn't really do as much as you think, because one of the big problems was the delay in the signal and trying to follow what you were going with that was already moving and the light, the blooming light.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at some of it, you'll see it.
Yeah.
Have you seen much of it?
Well, the early missions had a problem with that.
Right.
They did it. That apparently was not so much a problem with the J missions. I do have the DVD sets from spacecraft films for 15, 16, and 17.
Okay.
And the digital transfers are just excellent.
Right. The earlier cameras, which I was involved with also, as you know, the Apollo 12 crew burnt out the camera.
That's right.
You know, Al Bean pointed the camera at the sun and it was all over with.
Mm-hmm.
And the controllable, the J mission camera, we didn't have quite that problem. It was a better camera, and we were able to control what we were doing.
Yes.
The biggest way of controlling light, actually, that we used really was zoom more than the light settings.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know what I mean? By zooming away from it.
Right. Well, you used that as a tool also to help you pan, correct?
Right. You want me to explain how that all worked?
Yeah, because I think people are mistaken in their belief that your camera control was a result of a joystick, but it was not.
No. What happened was that on our console, when we send commands, we had a panel or a series of panels for sending commands, and we underneath each button is a program command out of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was we built in there. Guys that worked for me went in there and put the requirements in, and then they were built by the IBM troops and so on. But basically what it was, for example, you had a pan left, a pan right, and a pan stop.
Oh, okay.
And then you had a pan increment right and a pan increment left.
Mm-hmm.
Now the left and the right and the stop are self-explanatory, but the other one actually moved the camera 3 degrees.
Okay.
It sent a start, it waited, and then it sent a stop automatically with the one depression of the button.
Mm-hmm.
So the camera actually moved left to right one, you know, 3 degrees.
Right. Okay.
Same thing worked on the tilt. It worked on the zoom. Actually, it wasn't 3 degrees on the zoom, but it just went so far.
Mm-hmm.
And those things were used for tweaking. Mm-hmm. And doing small things. The other controls were all, you know, tilt, ALC changes and so on, those were all off of buttons. There is no joystick.
Right.
Yeah, that did not happen. And then every time you sent the command, it took you, if I remember right, about, I don't know what it says in there, what does it say, 3 seconds, 5 seconds?
Something around 3 seconds, yeah.
Yeah, before you saw what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to try to anticipate what you were doing a lot.
Yes.
But the zoom was the big item, because if the crew started to move, the best thing to hit first was the zoom.
Yes, that's...
You know, if you start, if you open up the lens, then the first thing that's happening is it's not as fine a control, and then if the person is moving left or right, then you can crack that command in,
mm-hmm.
and then you can work your way back down again. But the zoom allowed us to try to keep up with them without them running out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because also it's a matter of trying to anticipate which way they were going to move.
Right, but if you opened up the lens, then you had
mm-hmm.
more time.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I'd like to backtrack a little bit,
sure.
because the in terms of training with the camera itself, you said there really wasn't much real-time training with you in a remote location trying to control the camera, say, with the astronauts out of the...
There was some down in Merritt Island, with the crew down in Merritt Island, and then what they did was put a delay in the signal.
Okay.
You know, we did some work like that, but it wasn't quite the same because the crew was walking in a 1G situation. They weren't loaded down in a,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a surface and in a suit device that, you know, pack and everything else.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
The other thing we did for training was we actually went on a couple of lunar training trips with the crew.
Okay.
I went up to a meteor crater in Nevada with
mm-hmm.
the Apollo 17 crew, for example.
Okay.
You know, where they did their lunar, where they did their training.
Mm-hmm.
And I went along on the training trip and so on.
Okay. Okay, you've described the camera controls. That was important.
Let me say something
so you
give the guy credit, will you?
Sure thing.
The guy who really came up with the motor idea and doing this whole thing was a guy by the name of Bill Perry.
Okay.
And Bill worked over in engineering, and he was the one that came up with the actual thing. RCA built it, but he basically came up with the design.
All right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Bill is dead now, but I always like to try to give him the credit where credit's due. He is the guy that came up with the idea of the capability of controlling that camera and doing that.
Okay, good.
And the motors and so on.
Okay. And he was, which group was he working in?
He was an engineer over in the telecommunications division.
Okay.
Of engineering at NASA, JSC.
Okay. I'll make sure to put him in there because...
I really would appreciate that.
Yeah. And what I'll do, too, is when I complete this, whether it's... There's a chapter on engineering the LRV.
Sure.
I'll make sure to send you I'll take the portion on the communication system, email it to you,
uh-huh.
and you can review it as Sam did, so you can see your comments in context and that
okay,
sort of
that would be great. But the rover itself was built out of Marshall.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
Do you have the guy's name who, in your work, if you come up with the guy's name who did most of that work, is it Jim Sisson? I was trying to remember.
Jim Sisson, yes. Jim and I have emailed. He was involved, although he's sort of been... A kind of a reluctant participant.
Is he really?
Only in the sense that I've interviewed some other people first, and Ron Creel was a thermal engineer on the subsystem. Ron's been a big help for me. I call him the fact police.
I see.
He works for SAIC right now.
Oh, does he?
But he's been a really great help and turned me on to other sources, and one of them is Ed. So Ed has reviewed the entire Chapter 1 engineering. He was involved with it, I guess, after Sonny Maria finished up the engineering program of the LRV.
I see.
And Sonny was very helpful to me, and I've had a chance also to interview Dave Scott,
sure have.
John Young, Charlie Duke,
mm-hmm.
Gene Cernan, but I haven't interviewed Jack Schmidt yet, although I've been in contact with him via email.
Well, he ought to be able to help you some, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I'll be talking with Jim Irwin anytime soon, but maybe later.
No, I don't think I'll be talking to Jim Irwin.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yep.
At the how soon did you have to be at your station, if you will? And were you in mission control directly?
Oh, yeah.
With the other...
Yeah, you see, I actually was in charge of all communications and mission control. That was part of my
mm-hmm.
area.
Mm-hmm.
And also the procedures area at that time. Those guys worked for me. So, besides running the camera, we were running all the communications on the lunar module and the command service module at the same time.
My goodness.
Now, there were other guys involved in my back room and so on, but we ran the whole package.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just playing with the camera. When we played with the camera, if you want to call it playing with the camera, we controlled the camera. My guys in the back room pretty much managed the rest of the communications equipment.
Okay.
And so on.
Okay. How soon before the start of the EVA on Apollo 15 did you have to be? Several hours before?
I was in there actually for launch. I go all the way back to launch. We were running shifts.
I see. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was running a shift, and that shift turned out to be the EVA shift.
Okay.
But going back, it transfers its way all the way back to launch.
Mm-hmm.
Just like on other missions where we didn't have the camera before that.
Okay. Well, once the rover was deployed, but they set, for 15, they set the camera up in a static position first. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. So you actually had a chance to check it out. Off the top of my head, I can't remember now if you were panning. It was on a tripod or a pedestal or something.
Well, I don't remember that, but let me. When you see the pictures at each stop,
mm-hmm.
you'll notice the first thing that happened when you see the TV pictures. It does a 360-degree turn in 3-degree increments.
Yes.
You see that thing?
Yes, I remember those.
Okay, that is something that was worked out between myself and my guys and the USGS guys.
Okay.
Who were doing that for the lunar surface team in the back room.
Mm-hmm.
And we did what was called a wide-angle pan, a WAP, at every site. So the crew would pull up to a site, or when we started off right there at the lunar module, the first thing we did is we did that 360-degree pan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was as we did that, every 3 degrees, the guys in the back room would take a Polaroid picture of the TV set.
Okay.
And then they pasted those guys together so that they had something on their desk there in front of them to request things that they wanted to see for their planning, because they couldn't, you know, they couldn't get a tape quick enough back from the TV people and do that. So that gave them, every time we stopped, a complete panorama of where we were and what was there, and if there were things there they wanted to see, like, you know, when we went over, if you look at the 17 thing, when Gene comes up to that huge boulder,
mm-hmm.
They spotted that earlier on.
Right.
See, and that's what we did. And that was all prearranged with a fellow by the name of Tim Hike with USGS, who worked for Gordon Swan.
Okay.
And that was part of the deal. So the one thing I can remember is that on 15, when we took control of the camera, that was the first thing I believe we did. Am I right? Is that what was in the
Yeah, of course the camera had to pan up to get...
Right.
And, what amazed me is the camera's ability to go almost 360 degrees.
Uh-huh.
And that was a very important feature because...
the field of view overlapped.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The one thing I did notice when you compare 15 to 16 images, of course, was... The 15 camera didn't have a sunshade on it,
mm-hmm.
and that became pretty obvious in some of the shots because of the way they were oriented, where they were standing. I mean, the sun.
Also, there on the 16 camera, not on the camera itself, but there was a couple of other operators there.
Okay.
You know, Gary Scott and Al Pennington, which was not true on 17. I don't want to go into that. But camera. If you listen to the transcripts, we're constantly asking the crew to clean the mirrors.
Yes.
And that's because the camera's getting too hot.
Mm-hmm.
So the lunar soil is kind of, I guess when it attaches, it almost like attaches itself to the surface of the camera.
It's like a solar collector almost.
Yeah, it's kind of like almost like a pasty soil, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to explain the soil because I never put my hands on it, but it used to stick to the lens, to the lenses. We'd have them clean the lens and clean the mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gets too hot. Now, what was really funny is we were warned about that, and it worked on 15, and then, have you ever talked to thermal people?
Well, yeah, Ron Creel is Mr. Thermal.
All right, well, they're a weird bunch, okay?
He's an engineer, man.
And the first thing I knew after going through that madness on 15, I looked up in my office one day, and here was a couple of guys in the thermal area who are actually really good friends of mine. And they're in there starting to tell me the camera's going to get too cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I threw them out of my office.
Right.
But the camera didn't get too cold. It got too hot. But that was the big problem we had there about overheating and cleaning it. You can hear all that in the transcript, I'm sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it didn't help when fenders would break or something like that.
No, and it just threw more crap up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And also, how much work was done in close proximity to the rover? You know, when the crew was banging around in that area.
Yes.
And so on. And if they fell down.
Right.
Scott, and so on. And, you know, when you think about it now, then it makes sense. In the real-time world, you never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened.
Were your impressions of the images that were finally coming back as good as you had hoped they would be?
Oh, they were better than I thought they would be. I really, truthfully. First thing, let me explain something to you.
Okay.
I had no background at all in television operation, you know.
Okay.
You know, we're not camera operators of any kind whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so this was something brand new for us. And also, it was really, I know the camera now compared to what you could do now with a thing you could put in the palm of your hand up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was a pretty wild operation. It was a pretty, operation. It was a pretty far out there in the state of the art for a camera like that.
Well, it was when you consider that the signal has to travel, a quarter of a million miles?
Yeah. Yeah,
and then
yeah.
get picked up in a big dish, and then right. go all through all these systems
right.
till it gets to Houston, and there it is.
Yeah, and it was kind of amazing when the thing came up and we started to move the camera. The next thing I knew, I had a hand on my shoulder,
mm-hmm.
and Chris Kraft had his hand on my shoulder, just looking at it, shaking his head. He was just shaking his head, looking
yeah.
at it. It was just, you know, and everybody in the control center came to a dead stop. Just everybody just stopped
mm-hmm.
because they had no idea that this thing was going to look this good. You know, when you look at Neil Armstrong coming down that ladder, you know, I don't know how good your eyes are, but I have to really concentrate to figure out what I'm looking at.
Right. Well, it was upside down to begin with. That
right.
didn't help.
Right.
Yeah.
But when you looked at this thing here, you know, this was a quantum leap.
It was.
You know,
it's an order of magnitude.
Oh,
really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just great. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mentioned before these digital transfers from
on the DVD.
On the DVD, do you have any of those sets?
No, I don't have them. No, I don't. No.
Oh gosh, Ed, that you would be astounded at how well they've not only just cleaned them up, but you get to see the images as clear as they could possibly be, and now they're.
Those from?
What's that?
Who did you buy them from?
They're called Spacecraft Films.
Oh yeah, I've got it.
The fellow who runs it is called Mark Gray, and I believe he's in
yeah.
South Carolina. Really nice guy.
Yeah, I think I've talked to him, yeah.
And,
Maybe I'll break down and spend some money.
Well, you might want to see your work and show it to your grandkids, because they...
My grandkids, huh? Okay.
All right, your kids.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's... What's so neat about it is that you actually get to see in today what people in Mission Control saw. You know, 35
yeah.
years ago.
Yeah, there was an outfit that did some post-flight work on the video for JSC to enhance it.
Yes, I heard about that.
Yeah. And I forgot what their names were.
Okay. I've got them in my notes somewhere. What was the... what was your well, every you told me everybody else's response. What was your response as you were panning this thing?
I was really happy with what it looked like and everything else. But I was so when you did this, you was very intense.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't intense that it was going to blow up or anything like that or anything. But you really had to pay attention to what you were doing.
Yes.
You couldn't you couldn't turn away. You had to watch the picture. We had a TV set at the console, and it was being shown up on the IDA4 screens in the front, but you really had to pay attention to what you were doing, because if you were, one, we were doing the wide-angle pan, you had to get that right for the guy in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Two, if you were trying to follow the crew, you couldn't turn away, because if you turned away, it was all over.
Right.
You know, and three, the other thing was when you were getting instructions from the back of something they wanted to see.
Yeah.
Something they wanted you to see if you could show them.
Well, I know.
But you were when they were at a stop, when they stopped and you took control of the camera, you didn't fool around, or you couldn't take your eyes away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you were it was pretty intense as far as making sure you stayed with your job. It wasn't like, well, I think I'll talk to Charlie who's sitting next to me. If you did, he had to be looking straight at you. Now, by the time you got to 17, it was a lot easier because, you know, you were used to it. In fact, I let several people actually command the camera.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy by the name of Bob McCall, an artist. I don't know whether you know him.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Bob got a chance to send a couple commands to the camera. In fact, I saw him, I think, where was it, in Seattle recently. We kind of joked about it. We were up at museum up there.
Okay.
But at first it was very, very intense, but it was great. Everybody was just a guest.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that there were some times where the astronauts would move out of camera range, but you didn't move the camera, and my assumption always was that's because you were getting requests from the back room to either look at something or maybe there had been some camera difficulty. I don't
know. We had some camera difficulty on 15.
In terms of control.
Right. But, basically, if we didn't follow the crew and we were looking at something else,
mm-hmm.
we were either doing the pan, which you knew when that was going on, or we were looking at something from the back room.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, the flight director would say he wanted to see something, but that was very low priority on my scale of things to do. Very low.
Mm-hmm.
Which didn't, you know, make them too happy because they all think they're God.
Were there times when they'd return from an EVA, they would power down the camera for their rest period. I was going to say their sleep, but were there times when you actually had a chance to pan the camera or do whatever while?
Yeah, we could, but we didn't fool with it too much, if mm-hmm. I remember right. I can't really remember too much about that. I don't think we did much when they went inside and we shut her down. I don't think we did anything much with that. I know one time I looked back at Earth, I remember trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't do too much with that, no.
Okay. Well, of course, you were there. You did the control for all 3J missions then, right? Were there lessons learned from Apollo 15 that you then... In the post-mission meetings, what kind of discussions went on that involved the camera system that they wanted to improve for 16 in terms of...
The camera system for 16 and 17 was the same system.
Mm-hmm.
There was no change done engineering-wise that I remember.
Okay.
They did, you know, we were different cameras because we burnt the motor out and so on, but basically the camera was the same as far as I can remember. Olin Graham may be able to tell you more than I can. I can't remember that. I can't use his phone number. But no, I can't remember any changes. We did sit down and go over things about how we wanted to operate and different things and our coordination with the ground stations and so on. There was a lot of work done there between missions. There was discussions with the crew for the next crew between ourselves.
I do have a photograph of the LRV-3 that Cernan took after he parked it, but in terms of...
Let me tell you what happened to us.
Okay.
On 15, which was the first mission, we had motor problems. And we were told not to try to follow the LEM up as it lifted off.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I just sat there looking at one spot. On 16, the lunar module flew out of our pre-programmed commands. And the reason that was is that John Young parked the camera, the lunar rover, in the wrong place.
Oh, I see.
Now, the way that lift, you know how the lift